Sometimes it is harder to deprive oneself of a pain than of a pleasure. Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Same Old Wombles podcast. We're brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day, helped do so indeed. We're by the fans, for the fans, now and forever. Same Old Wombles is non-affiliated and proudly unofficial. Just the Same Old Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis, and tonight I am joined in our first ever two-hander by Mr. Matthew Cooper, who I'm sure will agree with this epitaph that the loneliest moment in someone's life is when they're watching their whole world fall apart, and all I can do is stare blankly. Yeah. On this week's show, Stick or Twist with Johnny Jackson. Has ploughland become a financial burden? Would a change be too little, too late? How do we advocate for fan ownership? And even if it's just Matt, we'll have the number for Matt in the Some Numbers quiz. Welcome to episode 33.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them. We've done what we should, fought as hard as we could.
Hey, Mark. Beautiful. And yes, that totally summed up, I think, how we all felt after the Salford match. And I think the reason that it's just the two of us is because other people are still finding it hard to process 24 hours later. That was a complete shock. I'm still reeling from that. I mean, you don't go 2-1 up in the 92nd minute, save a penalty, and then still lose 3-2. It's just the most... someone said it was peak AFC Wimbledon.
Oh, it was almost peak the type of thing that used to happen in the CCL or the Ryman South or whatever, you know, where we'd sneak a win over a Herne Bay or Ramsgate or something like that, and Everard would pop up with a towering header at the back post to grab a win that we couldn't get. But and then of course you have, you know, insult added to injury when the referee realised obviously the game was over because they scored their goals. You know, you get bottles thrown on the pitch, which we're going to get fined for and banned or something like that again. And then, of course, Matt Smith, big lump up front, because that's all that happens in League Two, stands there, opens up these two bottles. I mean, this genuinely, to me personally, was bringing the game into disrepute because he knew exactly what he was doing. It was... what's it housery that Harry Pell and Lee Brown times 10 would have been proud of? And he opens up these two bottles of Coke, takes swigs from them, and then throws them off the pitch again. And does it twice while the referee's standing there. And the referee does not give any monkeys whatsoever. Now, I know that's just a tiny, tiny microcosm of everything that was going on. But after you've just had those goals scored, after your team's just self-combusted again, it's probably fortunate that we're just such a mild managed group of fans.
I mean,
because that type of thing is genuinely inciting the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I was fuming at him. I mean, I was fuming, and I could hear Joe Blair a couple of rows behind fuming at their second goal, because for me it looked like the ball had gone out, and I think Joe was saying it looked like it was offside, but. But then them coming onto the crowd like that, it was just like, you know, that's why you always have to kick the other way. Do you know what I mean? Because the emotions are so much higher. And this was the first time I've seen us kick towards our home fans in the first half. Usually,
I guess they must have won the toss and switched us around.
Yeah.
And again, it's going to sound like sour grapes, but I'm sorry. I don't care how much money you've pumped in. I don't care what kind of businessmen they've got from Malaysia to be able to finance their stuff. If a team that is supposedly pushing for the playoffs to the third tier of league football can bring 200 fans to a game, when we took 600 and would have taken a lot more to Harrogate, as we discussed on last week's podcast, and we've got nothing to play for, nothing going anywhere. And apparently we got treated poorly by Harrogate, and some of our fans with tickets were turned away. And they bring 200 down. Now, that to me is a non-league, is a non-league club. It's a non-league club well above their station. Just like they're trying to boost up Wrexham and talk up Wrexham as the biggest Hollywood fairy tale, which frankly is utter BS, in my opinion.
Well, there was a good thing, I think, the Have I Got News For You Twitter feed were saying, you know, what beautiful romantic story it is. Just proves what you can do with Hollywood owners who pump in so much money so that now they've got five times more than the average league. And I think they've lost £3 million. So there's nothing romantic about the Wrexham story. It just has a Hollywood tag to it. And for whatever reason, and obviously that's going to attract press. But the Salford thing is exactly the same. It is pitiful. I mean, Wrexham next season, when they'll easily be in our league, and they'll probably top League Two. I wouldn't be surprised.
They'll
bring
fans.
It'll be packed. They'll bring, because they have a long tradition. They have a long tradition of being a football. It was really weird. I mean, I did find myself thinking, this is pitiful. You're challenging to go up in the playoffs, and you've only bought 200. And it reminded me of being in the 80s watching Wimbledon, when obviously we did not take that many people away. But now we've changed so completely. If you think about, I think people have said that, you know, our average home attendance now at Plough Lane, it's comparable, you know, to some of the games we were playing when we were in League One.
Absolutely. And again, just quickly flicking back to the Harrogate game, where obviously comfortably we should have won. We played a team with nothing really very much to play for, that thought they were just about safe, and we were 2-0 up in the 89th minute. Again, we took 600 plus up there. A lot of people planned to be away for the weekend. You guys had some plans to do it and had to change your plans because, you know, unfortunately, the tickets were not available. There were a lot of hardcore new, so to speak, women fans. What I mean by new is, you know, they are probably old enough to be our respective children, or, you know, late teenagers or you know, in the early 20s or whatever. And they're the ones that have been up to, you know, crazy midweek away games. They're the ones that would have been to Accrington midweek when we won last season, the last win before the 27 losses and so on and so forth. And you shouldn't just have to win any game to reward the away fans that put the hard yards in and put the hard investment in or whatever. Yeah. But they're the ones that you really feel for.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I had bank holiday off and I was just doing domestic chores. And I was so convinced something might happen, I actually put a timer when it came up to 6 minutes injury time on Twitter. I put a timer on my kitchen oven clock for 6 minutes, which then went off. And then it came through that they'd scored after that. Because apparently we were so naive, we brought a sub on, which wastes more time, kicked the ball away, had two players booked.
But I mean, I think, you know, the match on Monday, yesterday, looking at it, what's quite interesting is I think as soon as we had the penalty saved, that was a chance to make a sub. And I'm interested at that moment that's what I think is slightly troubling me about JJ, is that there was an opportunity there to make a sub. So take off Oggs, who was playing brilliantly at right back. He was playing really well, and put on Gunter then. Literally, for the last 2 minutes, take the sting out of the game, because at that moment, when the penalty had been saved, there was so much heightened emotion around, so much was going on, you could take the sting out of the game. You could close it all down, take off a right back, put on Gunter, and just calm everything down. Because I think everything got too overexcited, and we lost our heads.
Yeah, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but a quick story that I heard a while ago, because obviously Will used to be captain. And the story that I was told a while ago was that when probably Wally came in as manager, he said to, he asked around, he asked Bassey and other coaches at the club who he should make captain from the playing squad. To which the answer was, you know, you could make, it would be popular, it would be the correct decision to give it to X, whoever X would have been, someone like Wagstaff probably at the time. But actually, the fans would like it if you gave it to Nightingale. But the reality is, the end of the whole of the second half yesterday, Pierre apparently got injured blocking a shot. And again, I thought he looked pretty solid for the first half. But then second half, you bring Luke on, who's played one game away at Barrow, who's never played above Ryman level. And then you put him up against Matt Smith. He's got 250, 300 appearances in the bank and probably 120 goals plus. And the type of, as I said, what's it, Housery, to act the way he did. And unfortunately, he just bullied him. And he looked completely ill at ease for the first goal. And it was nowhere near it for either of the other two goals. The guy he was supposed to be marking scored both the two goals. And Will was the only, it was a completely homegrown defence in the second half. Obviously, Curry on the left, Oggs on the right, Luke Jenkins and Will. But Will isn't the right kind of player, even though he's more experienced than the other three put together times about five, to actually galvanise those people and exactly, as you say, take the sting out of things.
Yeah, and that's, I think that this is our problem. My understanding, when JJ came in, one of the reasons we went for him was about youthfulness, about the fact that, you know, it's a young man's game, this sort of management, travelling around the country and doing all that sort of thing. But there is something to be said for experience, for having seen a game so many times and to know what to do in those moments. And I think the thing which is troubling is we've been using an experiment, you know, he's using us as an experiment, because it's his first real proper gig, isn't it? I mean, he stepped in for Charlton for a period of time, but he was got rid of fairly quickly then. So this is the longest he's been in, and it's kind of a bit of an experiment. So he's learning as he goes, you know. And there was moments recently in this horrendous run where he was making subs at 80, 85 minutes, you know, and we're just going, what the hell's that about? And then in a situation like yesterday, you're thinking he's not making the subs that someone with a bit more experience might have done. And he'll learn from this. But I wonder, you know, is it going to be with us? That's the thing. And it was just so utterly. I don't know if it was predictable, but I didn't feel that. I mean, it was just so depressing. And it you know, I think for a lot of us, it's like you wake up with it, it's still leaves that taste in your mouth.
Oh, it's still niggling away day to day. I mean, today, weather-wise in London, you know, beautiful, bright, sunny day, striding to work with shades on, come home off the train, and it's lashing down with rain. And you know, you got a soaked coat and you haven't taken an umbrella, which is a bit almost like a microcosm of yesterday's game, you know. Starts off fine, looks all good. But I have to say, you weren't sure as to whether or not it was predictable. Walking around at half-time, chatting to you guys and seeing other people on the concourse, no one was like, yeah, great, you know, we're winning, we're going to forge on. People was almost like, what minute are we going to... I mean, I've heard other people talk about and seen stuff on social media saying, yeah, you could have got 6-1 or something on us losing 2-1. Surprised it was that generous, frankly. Because there's so much of a pattern. There's again some useful stats. There's always useful stats around on Twitter somewhere. The one that came out today was the balance of numbers of goals that we've scored in the first half of games this season, which is in our favour.
Yep.
And the number of goals we conceded in the last 15 minutes of games, which is the last 20 minutes of games, sorry, because it's broken into 15, 20 minute intervals. And needless to say, it's definitely not in our favour. Something like scored 6, conceded 13 in the last 15 minutes.
It's ridiculous. There is one thing I'd like to pick up on, and I was just thinking about this yesterday.
I was happy in the haze of a drunken hour, but heaven knows I'm miserable now. I was looking for a job, and then I found a job, and heaven.
I think that January still, when you do the autopsy of the season, January is going to be the pivotal time. So if you look at, let's say, the Orient game, okay? So that that's by far and away our best performance of the season. Out of that side, it started with Nick, Gunter, PK, Towler, Curry, Woodyard, Pell, Magoma, Chislett, Assal, and Davison. So out of that side that beat Orient, you didn't have Nick, didn't have Gunter, didn't have PK, didn't have Towler. You had Curry, Woodyard, that's two. And even Chis wasn't there yesterday. Two out of that side that beat Orient. That is what we're talking about. This is what's happened to us. So in that run when we were doing well, we've only got two of those players who played yesterday.
And if you are a Wrexham, as we were talking about earlier on, you signed a Ben Foster, earning pittance. Now pittance to Ben Foster is still going to be about £5,000 a week. So let's not dance around that one. They're paying Mullin £5,000 a week apparently in the National League. So that is what it is. It's basic economics. But I mean, the experienced centre back that was basically allowed the freedom of at least half the pitch yesterday, the number 15 for Salford, was Adrian Mariapa, Jamaican international, which is why there was a Jamaican flag in the Salford end. Excellent link between Jamaica and Salford, obviously. And I don't know whether he's retired or certainly he hasn't played very much recently, but most recently he played with Watford and other clubs in the Championship and in the Premier League. He's not going to be playing for Tuns, Haepney in League Two, is he?
No, exactly. I mean, it is economics. And I think, but like I say, you know, to be in a situation where the sides change so dramatically from December through to January, I mean, so it's not just about those players going back, and then there was the injuries. So we've had to put in a whole new squad, basically, can put together a whole new team to compete here. I don't know if you can make excuses. I'm not entirely sure that I'm making excuses for JJ. I guess it just feels that there's a bit of naivety with him. That's the problem I've got, is it just feels like there's a little bit of naivety, and also there feels like a slight disconnect with the fans. You know, one thing I was interested in is in the post-match interview, either it could have been asked or he could have offered it, you know, a message to the fans, just to say to empathise with us with what we're going through, because I can understand the fans feel. He didn't even say that. I understand the fans must feel really knocked off with what's going on. You know, something like that. Something that connects us to him, because it feels like he's being protected. I mean, he's not coming onto the pitch after the game necessarily to, you know, go down to our end to give an applause. So. Or anything, you know. So there just feels like a slight disconnect up between us and JJ. And I think that we won't be able to get rid of him. And this is we comes on to the next point. This is the problem that we have. We can't get rid of him because we can't afford to.
Three very, very valid points to touch on. The naivety. Is the naivety in the players? Well, yes, but that's natural if you're only 18 like Luke Jenkins and you only played one game in your club career. Is it with Jackson in terms of expecting certain things from certain players? Well, actually, for example, he took off DJ, who hadn't tracked back once in the whole game, and Curry was being overloaded every single time. And in the end, that's exactly where they sneaked in behind Curry. But they'd been doing it all the way through the game. It was just the fact that the crossing was poor that actually saved us up to then. So that's naivety on the part of the players. From Jackson's point of view, you touched about it before. After Robinson and Wally and Glynn, people were saying, and obviously Ardley, we wanted a clean break. We wanted a younger manager. We wanted somebody to bring new ideas in. As a principal, that's right. Whether Jackson was the right manager at the wrong time or the right manager in the wrong club, who knows? Because if we're going to bring a young manager in overall, they're not going to have much more experience than Jackson had when he came in. Now, you talk to someone like Neil Warnock, and I was dipping in and out whilst helping sell programs yesterday. Warnock came in 5 or 6 games ago. Huddersfield were absolutely sinking ship, just about to be taken over by some American owner, adrift at the bottom of the championship. Redoni hadn't scored a goal in his first season all season, even though apparently he'd been doing well. Warnock comes in with over 1,000 games probably under his belt, steadies the ship. But then half time yesterday, Huddersfield were 2-0 up against Blackburn, having won the game before. And they're playing Blackburn, one of the playoff contenders. And the game ends up 2-2 with Blackburn scoring in the 92nd minute. Yeah. And also Reading gave up a winner to Preston in the 92nd minute, and that's cost Ince his job. But he was a franchise manager, so frankly, he can go back to franchise and stay there. But the point is, there's two very experienced managers. Now, Warnock didn't come out screaming and shouting and complaining and whatever about his team having let that 2-0 lead go, even though they're fighting at the bottom of the table, because he's got the experience and he knows how things are. Doesn't always work that you bring that experience in. Blackpool brought in Mick McCarthy, having been in the same relegation fight, rudderless at the bottom of the championship. And they've turfed him out again after about 15, 16 games. And he's got as much experience as anyone, league-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a thing about a fit. A manager and a player, they need to fit. And I'm sure that Jackson, given the right circumstances, the right environment, it would probably he could do well. I'm not sure this is the fit for him. But as I've said, with loads of managers being sacked, and I know that Crawley and Rochdale have gone through managers, and they're still near the bottom, as it feels real. Could we afford to get rid of Jackson?
I don't know the finances, but the average fan on the street, listening to this or not listening to this, depending on their point of view, or raging on social media, or going on post-match reviews and so on, which everyone's entitled to do. Even after 24 hours of reflection, a lot of us are sitting there and saying, okay, do we have a manager right now that has shown that he can take a team, galvanize them out of a tight spot, and get them going? Well, actually, we do, because he's done that this season. Factual situation. The Sutton game was not big, not clever. We know all the reasons why. We don't need to dwell on that anymore. But we had lost a number of games up to that point. Weren't really going very far. And I don't know anything behind the scenes as to what may or may not have happened, but the reality was he changed the playing style. He's changed some of the players. Gave it a go. The Orient game came soon after that, and they went on a great run. Now, they don't have some of the players at their disposal right now. I don't understand why we've changed the situation where we used to get the updates in the programme with regards to the injuries, because that obviously gave the fans some ideas. Doesn't seem to make any sense to me, because at the end of the day, will be scouted, and the scouts will see, okay, Pell's not playing, Davison's not playing, so you're playing a certain way. But if we've lost the spine of Davison, Pell, and Pierce, which we have, and obviously Zanef as well in recent games, you still got to play in the same way. So if, for example, Pell and Davison didn't mark anyone at free kicks, but they marked zonally, in other words, they were the one that headed the damn ball out from every free kick and every corner, then you get someone else to do that. Doesn't matter who it is, you get someone else to do that. On occasions yesterday, both Nightingale and Jenkins were excellent in terms of their headers and clearances. But actually, as a cohesive defensive unit, we're clearly not at it, because we've let in goals to Rochdale, we've let in goals to Crawley. We've quite often been cut open, even by Barrow earlier in the season. You know, Barrow played a 4-5 man passing move and cut us open clinically. And I thought they were one of the better teams that actually played against us this season, but they've kind of dropped like a stone into mid-table mediocrity. So the manager can do it. The question now is whether or not he feels himself that he can do it. Yeah. And that post-match interview that I saw, that you quite rightly said he wasn't, you know, he wasn't galvanizing fans, he wasn't giving a message to the fans. To me, he didn't have an answer. And it's almost like you could see in his brain the cogs whirring around and he was trying to find an answer. Now, I'm guessing, I have no idea, no background information at all, but I'm guessing that unless you are a manager, I don't know, like a Carlos Corberan or someone who's been in the Championship and been in the Premier League, you genuinely can't afford to walk away from your job. So they say, it's someone like Jesse Marsh, for example. My sister was saying, I can't believe he hasn't taken the Leicester job. I was like, why does he need to? He got presumably a payoff from leaving Leeds. He could go into another high-pressure environment. And yes, it's a drug and the managers need that type of thing. But actually, if you are a manager like Jackson, even like Bassey, and I know the Bassey is going to be people's favourite, but actually Bassey is completely unproven as a manager. He's a very good coach, but he's completely unproven as a manager.
That's the thing. I think the thing is, it just feels like what concerns me is, and I'm not sure this will necessarily be the case, but what concerns me is a lot of people are saying that they might not renew season tickets. People, and these are people that I've known for a long time and trust their opinions. So because I know them. So I'm surprised if those are people that are saying that they wouldn't get if they wouldn't renew their season ticket. And if it becomes flat, then you know you have a real problem in renewing season tickets. If you make a change now, then you're in a position where a manager can come in, can look at what he's got, can start to make a connection with the fans and with the, you know, with what we're doing, and can maybe galvanize, maybe even get a win or two out of the last four games, and start to bring a bit of excitement in, and we've talked about it before, but if you're able to get the Cowley brothers in, and I'm guessing we might not be able to afford that or something, then that does kind of galvanize the support, and people start to get a bit excited about what's going on. If we go into next season on a downer, then it's really hard to lift that team, particularly if there's not huge changes. If there's not massive changes, then it's going to be very difficult to lift that team and lift the support base, because we're going to be expecting the same old thing. That's the problem. And then who knows? You know, then maybe Jackson does stay with us, and it's, you know, he does a wonderful job. You know, like we say, we just haven't got a crystal ball, but it doesn't feel like that.
And no, I you're right. I don't think it does feel like that. And it doesn't feel like that for fickle fans, and it doesn't feel like that for, you know, for more faithful fans. For some of us, what we do on a Saturday afternoon, every Saturday afternoon, every other Saturday afternoon, however frequently the home games are, between August and end of April, early May, is we go to football matches. That's what we do. That's part of our DNA. So if we didn't necessarily, you know, I mean, I don't want to hark back to things and claim that we have to renew season tickets just because, you know, we've got that club and that's all wonderful, you know. None of us are naive enough to think in a cost of living crisis where a number of people are not working at the same level as they were 2 or 3 years ago, not going to be able to work at the same level as they were 2 or 3 years ago because of circumstances and so on. People don't look at things and say, okay, so what are my outgoings every month? Or what big things can I do? Or, you know, I haven't been on holiday with my family for 3 years because we haven't been able to with COVID and so on and so forth. And if I don't spend £1,000 or the equivalent of £1,000 on 3 season tickets for me and little Johnny and my wife, just to be cliched about that, apologies for any sexism, then I can go and do something else and I can go on a trip of a lifetime to Disney World or Australia or the Bahamas, whatever. You know, that's a natural feeling, a natural instinct to do. From my perspective, it's my club. I've seen them at far worse, in far worse straits and far more dire straits and far worse situations and playing surfaces and backgrounds and so on and so forth. By no means am I comfortable and happy. And, you know, I'm well beyond frustrated. What you want to see is the understanding that the club knows where they're going and is doing things off the pitch, which they are, whether that's activities around the Hall of Fame and honouring the players that wore the yellow and blue in the past that will come up in the future, and then the dinner for that early next season, whether that's, you know, being the host to an international game between Australia women and Scotland women, as happened last week and that got international acclaim and so on and so forth. But fundamentally, whatever these activities are, you know, forget D-League, forget anything that's going on with the foundation, forget Wimbledon sporting history, because people are interested in what happens between 3 and 10 to 5 on a Saturday afternoon. And that's what drives everything else. You know.
And I think that is the big issue that we have, is that for a lot of people, it's the football that counts. That is the, and I don't think we should be naive about it. I mean, I think everything else we do is exceptional, and that's shown in the rewards and the awards that we get year on year. I think all the things that we do, the community engagement stuff is brilliant, Hall of Fame. Everything else that we do, you know, if it wasn't for our supporters D-Lag, you know, feeding the populations of, you know, Southwest London, it's incredible. It's an incredible achievement of what we've managed to do. But people do care, predominantly about what happens between 3 and 5. Like we say, whenever our games are, that's what we want to see, and that's what drives us. So. We have to, so, you know, there, and I think what annoys me particularly is every time we lose, and particularly when we go on a bad run, and this is another, I would say exceptional, but we had it last season. It's not just the manager that gets blamed. It's like the whole structure of the club is under attack. So we have to say, what is it about being a fan-owned club, which is beneficial? And I think there are a lot of great things, and it's not about ensuring that we don't get, you know, taken over by some billionaire, uses us as a plaything and then shafts us and ships us off on whatever, you know. That's an obvious reason why I'd like to remain in fan ownership. But I think that there are other things as well. Our story being AFC Wimbledon as a story, being a fan-owned club and what we've gone through, has attracted a huge amount of support and a huge amount of interest, and which I don't think we would have got had we've just gone through a normal route. You know, you've got to bear in mind, we're bringing people like John Green. He's interested in what we're doing because we're fan-owned. So on that side of it is a great thing. I think if we use our story, the fact that we are a fan-owned club, we can probably draw in other sources of revenue and income that other clubs can't pull in simply because of the structure that we have. And, you know, people say things like, you know, I'll sack the board or whatever it is. You have a chance, and you don't have this at any other club. You have a chance every year to completely change the makeup of the board. You can do it, you know. And yes, I mean, I think, you know, you have to be a Don's Trust member. Maybe that is something that needs to be looked at, you know, how the membership scheme, you know, can it be wrapped into the season tickets or anything else? I don't know. But yeah, that's so there are lots of wonderful benefits about being fan-owned. You can have direct communication with your board. You can pull in additional revenue, and we can pull in additional support globally because of who we are. And I don't think we do that enough, but that's the opportunities that we have that 95% of the clubs in the country don't.
The fascinating and also the most frustrating thing, obviously, for a football player, let alone a football manager, is that if you're a worker in an office or a worker in a business, then you're judged by your results. I work in events, so event to event, you know, you help put events and funding projects and foundations and stuff in the arts together as well. So you're judged on what you've achieved over a particular time frame, whereas a footballer is judged what they do game by game by game. So I look at someone like Casey McAteer, and I'm not using one player and just one particular public thing that he said, but you look at McAteer and Ali, and they are two of our better performing players recently, and Ali obviously was quite frustrated about at the end of the game and had a bit of a shouting match apparently with a fan at the end of the Harrogate game, apologized publicly on Twitter, came on there and said, you know, whoever the fan was, if they make themselves known publicly, then he'll happily sign a shirt and give him a free shirt as a thank you, as an apology. And then McAteer comes on, having scored his first ever goal in professional football, where his first ever loan. He played one game at the end of January as part of a scratch Leicester team in an FA Cup tie. And we was first ever loan. So yesterday was his first ever loan and first ever goal. And the game we played against Warsaw recently, he was delirious with happiness because that's the first time he's ever won as a professional. And his quote, and people can find it, they just look him up on Twitter, he doesn't block anyone or whatever, was very simple. It was simply along the lines of, you know, really delighted to see it score my first goal. But then as well as that, very simply, he put, none of us in the club, and he's a lonely player. He may not be playing for us next month, let alone ever again. So why should he care, so to speak? And a lot of people unjustifiably say, well, lonely players don't care. And some of the lonelies we've had this season, unfortunately, have proved that in previous years. However, this particular individual, good on him, really, because he basically straightforwardly said, we as players at the club know that the end of the game and what happened there and the loss and the way in which the game was surrendered or whatever the words he used is not acceptable. So they're owning it. They are owning it. They're not shying away from things. You know, fans want instant gratification. So fans will go on social media and they go in different places and they will essentially pick a fight the way that kids used to in the playground when, you know, we were kids growing up in the 70s and 80s about anything and everything. And if you disagree with their particular opinion, then they'll decide that you're see you next Tuesday and won't even listen to what you have to say. And some people have made their minds up, and it's up to the Don's Trust and it's up to the Don's Trust board to justify and demonstrate why, as you said yourself, what the benefits are of being a fans owned club, what the benefits are as any individual, whether you're in Wisconsin or in Timbuktu or in Greece, or the German guy Marcus that I met that came to the game at the weekend, who's from Leverkusen. And he's a Leverkusen fan, and hopefully we can get him on the pod as well when he's able to respond to me on social media. He came to his first ever game. They'd never been to London before, never been to England before. And he came to his first game and decided to come to AFC Wimbledon because, exactly as you said, he picked up on the Wimbledon story. You know, get these people on board, keep them on board, demonstrate why they should be part of it, demonstrate to the 16, 17-year-olds, you know, my teenagers growing up and are appropriate, children growing up, that they are owners of the club. They do matter. They have a voice. A voice will be listened to. We want to listen to it. We want to galvanize these people. And yes, to answer your question, I believe that there are conversations going on to try and make the Don's Trust membership part of the season ticket renewal information and opportunities there, so that people understand this is what you get. And the club are working on different opportunities. There's one happening this very week, on Thursday, in fact, to be able to open up the club, do an open training session and actually say, come on, junior fans, younger fans, come to the ground, sign, see the fans, see the players, see what's going on. And it's another incentive that Danny's done. Oh, congratulations to Danny and Mrs. Macklin, by the way. Mrs. Macklin had their third child, a little baby girl, I believe.
That's right. Again, Ruby, that's welcome to the world, Ruby,
that's the one, yeah. So, yeah, two boys and a girl they have now, so completing the set. But, yeah, these are just opportunities to engage, and Don's Trust want to do more and will be doing more and are discussing, you know, we've got board meetings coming up in the near future. And we've got strategy meetings coming up with the club management as well, so that everybody is online, everybody realizes what's going on, nobody's being naive, everyone's aware of where we're at with the debt, where we're at with the commercial engagement with sponsors, where we're at with the opportunities for equity. You know, nobody's walking around with their head in their hands, assuming everything is absolutely ideal and absolutely fine. We're all football fans, we're all hurting. Most of the Don's Trust board, with the exception of one or two, are old enough to have seen us in the latter days at Plough Lane, to have seen us through the Sellhurst years on and off, and to have seen us all the way through from Bottom Meadow at Sandhurst all the way through the Ryman and everything else. So we've seen us in the good times, we've seen us in the tough times. So we want to see this through. We want to listen to fans, we want to engage with fans. We certainly don't want to ignore fans, but we also don't want fans to automatically assume, because on the pitch in the last couple of seasons, things have not gone the way that anybody wants them to go, but that means automatically that being a fans-owned club is a bad idea, because that on its own, to me personally, is a naive and rather blinkered attitude to have.
I agree, but I think the messaging needs to come more about the benefits of being fan owned. I think that is something that needs to come across. I think the other thing that needs to be made abundantly clear is that, you know, we had a budget that whereas it wasn't competitive to be in the in the playoffs, it was certainly, you know, between, I think, 7th to 12th, you know, mid-table to 7th, and you always strive to go above that with what you've got. So we're underperforming in our budget. So we have a budget that can, you know, that could possibly take us into the playoffs. And I'm assuming that we'll probably have a better budget next year, you know, mainly due to sales, I'm assuming, due to the sale of a sound. I don't think all of that was used.
No, the reality is, as it always has been, way back to the days when Thatcher and Pevy were sold to Spurs and Besant was sold to Newcastle in the and Thorne was also sold to Newcastle in the days, let alone weeks and months following the FA Cup success. That's way back 35 years, however long ago the FA Cup win was. Wimbledon have been a selling club. And that's the reality of things, especially that's the reality of things in modern day football, when, you know, media moguls can buy up underperforming, poorly supported League Two teams like Salford. And it's not sour grapes whatsoever. It's just a practical, factual bit of information. Salford's league crowds, and fair enough, they're in a very busy built-up area. But unfortunately, people like Salford, compared to someone like Stockport, having met the Rochdale owners recently, they're a decent, honest local club, not so far from Manchester, trying to do their own thing, fighting in a competitive league where they need the best part of 5,000 or 6,000 fans, and they only get 3,000 or 4,000, which doesn't necessarily help to add things up. But overall, as the Don's Trust board and the club, obviously together, we're all looking at ways in which we can make the club that much more competitive. Now, with the budget we got this season, as you just said, the team and the squad and the management have underperformed. There's no dressing that up. There's no hiding away from that. The question then, I suspect, just again, speaking purely as a fan, is do the PLC board believe, and obviously Craig Cope has the ideas and outlined very eloquently recently in the programme and in the on the website as well, the strategy and the ideas moving forward. Now, they have Johnny Jackson as manager now. Do they believe that Johnny Jackson is the right manager to see that strategy forward, to see it all the way through? Yes, of course, there will be some money from the sale of a sale. And some of that has been allocated through to next season. And fans will say, yeah, great, look, we got £1 million, we can stick £1 million in the budget, which is, again, an opportunity to do. But equally, with every club, there are running costs. With every club, there are debts that need to be repaid in some way. And with our club, there are a lot of the larger debts that need to be paid in different ways. You can't bank on always getting through to league, to the third round of the FA Cup tie, and you also can't bank on being able to sell in multiple players on a long-term basis. What I'd like to be able to do as a club is be able to get someone like Morgan Williams under contract and be able to get someone like Spike Britz under contract. Now, Morgan Williams is Welsh under 17 international, so that won't have gone unnoticed. And Spike Britz is an England under 16 international, doesn't even turn 16 until June. But he's just won another tournament overseas. And I mentioned him in the pod before, you know, as I say, I know his mum through my mum. And, you know, he's Wimbledon through and through, and Bezo has been coaching him since he was about 8 or 9. But cold, hard cash talks. So whether or not he'll actually see Wimbledon first team shirt, I genuinely don't know. I certainly like to hope so. Of player will get us through.
When can we get someone like him on a longer term contract?
My understanding, and I don't know anything about football contract law, but my understanding is you can't sign a professional contract until you're 17. Oof. You can sign scholarship contracts, which is the way that they do things, and sign people at the age of 8 or 9. Apparently, we have Gary O'Neill, the current Bournemouth manager. We have his 9-year-old son on a scholarship contract. Saw that on Twitter the other day, which is ridiculous. Well, but you imagine, and we're old enough now to see sons of players. Oh, no. You know, Jake Forster Kaski is obviously the stepson, or the son of Darren Kaski, and the stepson of Nicky Forster, or the other way around, you know. And there's so many of those examples overall, all over the leagues.
I mean, I hope we can get these people on. I hope we can get these guys on a contract.
But as you say, that has to blend in with more experience.
Yeah, but I mean, so that's the thing. It's what we do for next season now, and just to try and get the energy back in, you know, try and get the enthusiasm back in, because that's the problem. If we go into next season, and maybe it's too late, maybe it's too late. If we go into next season on a down, then I think it's really hard for us to pick ourselves up in that off season. I think that's really, really, it's going to be really difficult.
The other interesting thing for me is there are so many managerial changes now at the top level, top two divisions. Again, haven't picked up the stats, but multiple changes in the Premier League. But when you've got, you know, £5 million per place or whatever they finish in the Premier League, then, you know, sacking a manager and paying him off the last 18 months of his contract isn't really a big deal. And there seems to be a managerial pool of about 35 managers sloshing around. And people just wash back up on the shore again. The latest example being Lampard going back to Chelsea. And I'm sorry, I'm not a Chelsea fan. I never have been. Obviously, I'm a Wimbledon fan, and therefore I'm not really going to speak highly of being Chelsea fans. But I've got Chelsea fans as work colleagues, and even they have stopped making comments about it. You know, they made comments that it was too soon for Potter to be manager, and obviously that turned out to be the case. But then and Lampard going back, they don't even, you know, it's not funny because they agree with you. So you can't make a lot of joke at their expense because they're actually
laughing along the situation.
And the flip side of that, of course, is that everybody, you know, that works in the place or drinks in the similar pub or whatever as their mate from Tottenham or Chelsea and sees Tuchel go from Paris Saint-Germain to Chelsea to Bayern Munich to wherever else next week. You know, Dean Smith pop up, and you can probably have a quiz as to how many clubs these people have had and what season they were actually at Club A or Club B or Club C. So they expect, therefore, instant gratification, as we said before, and instant results. And the instant results they want is, this manager hasn't done the thing. Oh, look, so-and-so was at another club for 15 games. He didn't do anything. That our manager hasn't done anything in 15 games, therefore.
Yeah.
Might be right, but might be also a little bit naive.
It's so difficult to know what we do with JJ. I mean, obviously, you know, we had that great time just before Christmas. And I think a lot of us, I remember speaking to fans, like going, there was one fan that was going, do you know what, I reckon we can finish top three. And it just felt like we were on the verge of something. And now I don't know. There's a sense of naivety. He needs some sort of something around him, some sort of support which is gonna help him. Maybe he doesn't have that. Maybe there needs to be a change in backroom staff. You know, maybe there needs to be a change in people around him, like, you know, who can help out. Because it's in moments where it's been difficult, I'm not entirely sure that he has been making the right calls.
Yeah, that's a fair comment, potentially. The reality is every manager, like we talked about Warnock, like we talked about Mick McCarthy and other managers have been successful over the years, they tend to have the tried and trusted number two, just like Ryan Clough had Peter Taylor.
Yeah.
But actually, that number two will be a friend, a confidant, a different type of player, maybe a better number two than the more appropriate number one. But there'll also be a certain person that the manager himself knows he'll get a certain answer out of. And whether or not we need a situation where we actually have someone that will turn around and stand up to, I mean, Steve McClaren, for example, to me, from the outside, has never turned out to necessarily be a particularly competent number one, let alone someone who should have ever managed England. However, as a confidant to Ferguson for a long time, and now as a confidant to Ten Hag, more recently, going back to Man United, he seems to have done rather well. Even Jonathan Woodgate was manager at Middlesbrough, didn't do so well, went off, became a media pundit. They brought Carrick in. Carrick brought Woodgate back. Woodgate's an ex-Middlesbrough player. He knows that situation. He knows that club. And they're flying.
Yeah. Exactly. It feels like we need to have some sort of change, but it doesn't need to be. Setting the club off. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a whole, you know, however many other non-fan owned clubs there are, I think there's only two or three of us. So it's like, you know, 89 clubs that are owned by someone, and some of them are going to finish lower than us, and some of them are going to have horrendous seasons as well. So I just think if we can get the uniqueness right, we will be able to draw in that investment everyone keeps talking about. We need to get that sorted. And I think that's probably easier said than done. But even if you sold up, I mean, how much money do you think we would be able to bring in? And who's gonna buy it? Why would they be interested in taking this on?
And of all the different clubs around here, you know, Charlton have had enough issues in terms of trying to find someone who will actually take the appropriate resources off their hands. The ground's owned by one businessman, the club's owned by another one. And they're mid-ranking in League One, and they have to sell all their best players as well. And they sold one of their most promising strikers last year to Chelsea, who's got nowhere near the Chelsea first team. I don't know whether he's on loan somewhere at all. And this season's strong product has been Carl Lieberman's son. And I'd be very surprised if this time next season, Carl Lieberman's son is not playing for them. He'll probably have been snapped up by an Arsenal or Chelsea or even a Fulham. And it'll be on loan somewhere like Middlesbrough in the Championship.
Yeah.
That's the name of the world. That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
Dog eat dog, as they say.
I'm interested. My big thing at the moment is how long? I mean, I'm glad we've got him on a 3.5-year contract, but how long is Al Hamedi staying with us? If well, we could keep him to next summer, I think we'd have done a good job.
At the end of the day, contracts are worth however much someone's prepared to pay to get you out of them, frankly. Because we know at the very top level that the top players will move from here to there. The reality with Alhamady, it seems, Ainsworth said, and Ainsworth outside of Wickham really isn't necessarily doing very well either, but Ainsworth said at the time that he thought there was definitely something there, and if he got the love and the cuddle, then he'd get actually something. If Ali was given the love and the care and attention, then he'd get somewhere. Now, he scored 8 or 9 goals in the second half of the season in this shit show of the second half of the season. Yeah. So whatever else Jackson and Skiverton are doing wrong, potentially, they haven't done a lot wrong there. No. But again, the reality is we've got a coaching backroom head of football operations in place in Craig Cope. He's now got Andy Thorne in place and two other scouts. So you would like to think, whether it's our club or anyone else's club, that if you are a Liverpool, then you've got 2 or 3 players who would play in Salah's position or in Van Dijk's position, and therefore they've got scouts to say, okay, what would these players cost, and are we likely to lose certain players? And likewise with us, do we think we're likely to lose Zanef or Callum Bailly or Curry or whoever? And if so, who are the 5 targets we've got for left back? Who are the 5 targets we've got for left sided centre back? Because left sided centre back seems to be really quite rare, frankly. And everyone that comes on for us as a substitute is a right sided centre back, as was proved when Will had to go left sided centre back yesterday for the second half and was found wanting, unfortunately. So yeah, fingers crossed we can keep Ali for an extended period. If Davison is fit, then you need another striker to go with it, you know. Is it a Dom Poleon because he scored loads of goals in Conference South? I somehow doubt it. Because, again, you would like to hope that they are scouting Conference South and Conference North and finding out who their strikers are, what are they earning, what their likelihood is of them being able to move. You know, Craig Cope apparently was instrumental in getting Huddlin in to Solihull Moors and then getting Huddlin sold for a large amount of money. And frankly, the only people that appear to have benefited from that are probably Huddlin's agent, Huddlin and wages, and Solihull Moors, but definitely not Huddersfield in that particular respect, because he's nowhere near their team, even though they're desperate.
I think there is a thing about, you know, we have now got stuff in place. Danny's only been in place from the summer of last year, and he's brilliant. I mean, that his engagement with fans on social media and getting online and all those sort of things, I think he is fantastic. His engagement is brilliant. Craig Cope, we don't know so much about. He's more, you know, he's much more behind the scene. But he hasn't really had any chance to get going with us. And you know, from reading the article, it sounds like he's much more ahead of the game than we're much more ahead of the game than we were previous year. So maybe if we're able to add these things together, and then you make you think, maybe through all that conversation, as you say, is JJ, does he fit that puzzle? And that's the thing, because if you can get that right, that sort of, like, you know, triangle of three of Danny, Craig and JJ, if you can get that right, that manager position right within it, then we could be onto something. My worry is that it's how we lift everyone back up, as I've said 1,000 times today, how we lift everyone back up for next season, because that's the worry that I have. 100%. That everyone is so flat at the moment and so nervous. I mean, you can't go into the 2 games in the 92nd minute winning both and then drawing one and losing another. It's beyond ridiculous. And there's a sense of nervousness, obviously, amongst our players, which spreads amongst the fans. And so is this, discontent.
I won't name who it was. You can find them quickly enough on social media. But a well-known Wimbledon fan posted something on social media last night, I believe, which was along the lines of, I love my football club and have done for years and always will, but my football club doesn't love me. And he was directly relating that to the last 2 games and the game and the leads we've lost. However, I think we will wrap it up there, because as positive as we can be, we've managed to be today, for which I thank you very much, Mr. Matthew Cooper. I'm going to leave you with one quick number, which we haven't talked about in terms of specifics, but you probably read it a million times. Oh. Your number is 35. What does 35 relate to?
The amount of points we've dropped from winning positions.
Correct.
And that,
and the worst thing about that, it was already a record before the weekend. It was 30 before the weekend, which was already a record and the highest in the EFL. And now we just extended that record.
Yeah. It's I mean, and that is, there you are. This is the problem that we have. But yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to better communication, better connections. That's what we need to have. We need to communicate better about what's brilliant about being a Fando club, and there is loads of it. And JJ needs, there needs to be a bigger connection between him and the fans, because after the Walsall game, he came on, he was cheering and, you know, going crazy and really enjoying that moment. But the other times, he, you know, we need to, he needs to be able, it's a difficult job, because he not only needs to pick up his players, and I can understand that's the primary function of his job, but he also needs to pick up the supporters. And I don't feel particularly picked up.
First and foremost, he needs to pick up himself, and he needs to believe in himself. And if he can do that, that's a good start. Yeah. And if he doesn't, and we observe that, then obviously that's another story entirely.
Yeah.
But to paraphrase a well-known phrase or saying, a football club is indeed for life and not for Christmas.
Yeah. Exactly.
So on that wonderful note, I say thank you very much to Mr. Matthew Cooper. That's been episode 33. We have, I believe, about another three or four episodes before the end of the season, before we can wrap up this particular car crash of a season. And then I think in our last episode, we should do month by month exactly how we felt at the end of every month and how it all turned out after all. How many points we managed per month. And how crazy the situation is. www.samewobbles.com. We're also on Twitter. Any topics you want to raise, anyone want to come onto the pod and be a guest star alongside other people we've had, we'd be delighted to hear from you. Thank you to Matt. Hopefully next week we'll have more of our regular panelists on. Podcasts usually out Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on circumstances and games. Thank you very much, and good night.